with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Well, it appears that Team USA women are driving Americans crazy. It's MLB trade deadline day, and because this is a football show, get ready. It's college football week here at VSiN with our college football betting guide coming out this Thursday and training camps well underway. We will talk everybody's favorite topic on the program today. Running backs, welcome into the Lombardi line presented by BetMGM.
I can't do it anymore. Why can't people understand that it's an economic issue? Why can't we understand this? Why is it so difficult?
Well, the reason that we have to talk running backs today is because the plot has thickened in Indy, which I'm sure you saw, because running back Zach Moss, who was working with the starting offense in the absence of Jonathan Taylor as he goes through this trade request, broke his arm in practice yesterday, and he's out roughly 4 to 6 weeks. So while Jim Mersey might not value running backs very much, he's running out of bodies.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I'd sign Kareem Hunt. You know, you got to figure that Jonathan Taylor isn't going to be 100% coming off the injury and the mindset. So, you know, that's what the NFL is all about. Sign someone else. They're out there. I mean, Dalvin Cook's out there. He left New York without a deal. Mm-hmm. I think Zeke Elliott left New England without a deal. So, there they are. Go get one. You know, this soap opera moves about. When I was in high school, I'd go see my 80-year-old grandmother at her house, and she didn't speak any English. She just spoke Italian. I go over to her house. She'd be watching soap operas. She couldn't really understand it. I mean, it was ridiculous, but she watched anyway, right? I'd go over there and talk to her, and a week later, I go back, and the soap opera didn't move an inch. Like, it didn't go anywhere. Like, this is the running back. We're not moving it at all. We're not getting anywhere. It's truly a soap opera, Stormy.
Well, for anyone real quickly who isn't up to speed, I'll give you a little bit of the timeline on the soap opera for Jonathan Taylor. He met with owner Jim Mersey on Saturday night. After that meeting, Taylor's trade request became public, Mersey responding that the Colts will not trade him, not now, not at the deadline. Then reports came out there was potential the team would put Taylor on the non-football injury list after he came off PUP with the ankle because of a back issue. But then he took to Twitter saying he never reported back pain to the team and never even had back pain. This is all very bizarre, Michael, particularly bizarre for Colts' new head coach, Shane Steichen, who was asked about the situation yesterday at the podium. Here's what he had to say.
What does Jonathan Taylor have?
What's that?
What does Taylor have?
He's just dealing with something right now, and I'm going to refrain from getting into all that.
Are you expecting JT to play this year for you?
Yeah, right now he's on this football team. He's on this football team, and when the medical staff clears him, he should be out here.
Where things sit right now, what are your expectations for how things play out with JT?
I think we're going to be talking about this for another couple of weeks. I don't think he's going to be out there very soon. I really don't. Look, the PUP list that he's on, it doesn't require the Colts to make a decision on him until the week after the final preseason game. I mean, he's not going to play in the preseason. So I think, to me, the next rub that occurs, and we'll hear about it, whether it's through unnamed sources or named sources, is if the medical staff clears him and he doesn't feel he can go. Mm-hmm. That's the next time that we're going to get into a dissertation. But for right now, just rehab. And if I were the Colts, I would just rehab. I wouldn't even have him out there on the field. I don't want to see his grumpy face out there. I would tell him to come in at rehab at 6 at night, go from 6 to 8, and, you know, and then come back the next day. I don't want him around the team. Until he gets his mind right, I don't want him around the team. Like, you know, one of the things that I've learned in leadership is the law of threes. When you have three groups of people in an organization, Jonathan Taylor is the group. People in group one will do anything you want to do. People in group two are undecided. You're not sure. They don't know what to do. They're waiting to see what happens. And then the people in group three typically are the most talented people, but you can't make them happy. Mm-hmm. You just can't make them happy. And as a leader, you try to pretend, you try to win over group three, and all it does is take everybody in group two and move them into group three, and it makes everybody in group one upset. So leadership-wise, focus just on the players that are there, focus on the players at hand, and ignore Jonathan Taylor.
Well, whatever it ends up being, Michael, the next time we get an update, please don't let it be tomorrow, because I can't lead the show for a fourth day in a row with Jonathan Taylor talk. I just need to move on. Zach Moss, like I mentioned, injured, out 4 to 6 weeks, going to need surgery for a broken arm. While he's out of the lineup, third-year backup Deion Jackson and rookie Evan Hull will take the lead at back. They also signed undrafted free agent running back Toriano Clinton. Who's that, you might ask? University of Indianapolis, all-time leader in rushing yards on Tuesday. Notable free agents still available. We mentioned Dalvin Cook, Zeke Elliott, Leonard Fournette, and Kareem Hunt. While we're on running backs real quickly, also good to note that Cowboys running back Ronald Jones suspended for 2 games for violating the league's policy on performance-enhancing substances. Joined the Cowboys on a 1-year deal earlier this offseason and was going to compete for a spot behind Tony Pollard. Now, in other injury news, Michael, we talked about this a little bit yesterday when Mike Pritchard was on the program when the news initially broke, but didn't get a chance to really get into it. Broncos wide receiver Tim Patrick suffering a torn left Achilles tendon, and this after missing all of last year with the ACL tear. So just another big knock for that wide receiver room.
Yeah, this is reminiscent, right, of Clay Thompson, right? He tears the Achilles. I think he did the ACL, then he did the Achilles, right? Yeah. And so it's this reminiscent. And you know what's interesting, Stormy, is this offseason you could have traded for Courtland Sutton. You could have traded for Jerry Jeudy. I mean, Sean was going to trade any of them. And they just cut K.J. Hamler, who can't stay healthy. He's a really talented player, but he can't stay healthy. So this receiver room, which appears to be a strength, when they had Jeudy, Hamler, Patrick, and Sutton, you're saying, oh, they got some really good receivers. Maybe not so much. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see Callaway, the kid that was in New Orleans. They signed him. Sean knows the offense. They drafted Marvin Mims. And, you know, Sutton and Jeudy are going to have to play to the level. Sutton's an expensive player. Jeudy's trying to get his fifth year guaranteed. So I think this will be a work in progress.
Yeah, Hamler dealing with a heart issue, unfortunately for him, but Courtland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, K.J. Hamler, and Tim Patrick played just 2 games where they were all available at the same time over the last 3 seasons. That is wild to think about, especially given the talent of those players. But even Marvin Mims, the rookie out of Oklahoma, he's dealing with a hamstring issue right now. So it's just like that running room continues to take a beating. And it's unfortunate knowing the help that Russell Wilson is going to need this season to run that offense.
No question. I mean, and they need, you know, Sutton. They can't stay healthy. I mean, Sutton played 15 games last year. Hamlin, you know, he was active for 7 games. That's all he was there. Jeudy was active for 15 games, only played him. I mean, they have a hard time keeping that room healthy. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a problem as they move forward. So I think, you know, and this is one of the areas that I thought Sean wanted to address. I think he wanted to liquidate some of the salary in the room, Sutton, Jeudy. Again, you could have traded for them in the offseason. They denied it, then they went back on it. But now they got to try to make this work.
Yep, coming off a 5-win season, the Denver Broncos are. Season win total in 2023, sitting 8.5 with the hope that Sean Payton and Russell Wilson can get that offense on track. In more positive news, Michael, let's head to San Francisco, baby, because 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan says Brock Purdy continues to impress and exceed expectations when it comes to his recovery time from that torn UCL in his elbow and the surgery he had. Quote, he looks great. He's come back with no arm troubles, looks totally healthy, and added he thinks Purdy is already getting his timing and rhythm back. I know it's just a small sample size so far, only a couple of practices, but this is exactly what 49ers fans and backers want to hear at this point.
No question. I mean, look, he proved it. He earned the job. There's nobody that could take him away. I mean, look, let's face it. Every guy other than Garoppolo that played for Kyle couldn't win. C.J. Beathard, Nick Mullins, Brian Hoyer, right?
All these guys. Oh, God.
Right? And so when they put Purdy in there, they had no expectations. But what he has is he has quarterback skills. He's got great instincts. He's got great timing. He's got the ability to tie his feet to his arm. And that's really important. And so, you know, and he got better as the year went along. Now, look, had he stayed healthy in that Philadelphia game, it probably going to be a different game. They only gained 164 yards total. They only threw for 83 yards, unfortunately, in the game. I mean, think about this. They held Philly to 269 in the game, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Philly only threw for 121 yards in that game, but because of the 3 turnovers, because of the quarterbacking, they lost 31-7.
Yeah, it's hard to compete when the defense knows every single play you're going to run because your quarterback can't throw a football. But during the time that he was healthy, Purdy was one of the most effective quarterbacks in the league from week 14 on when he took over as a starter in December of last year. third highest QBR, averaged the most yards per attempt, a little bit more of a playmaker than we saw from Jimmy Garoppolo at times. And it certainly helped that the guys around him were elite, averaged the most yards after catch for completion, nearly 7 a pop for Brock Purdy and those guys. You've got one of the best play callers in the NFL, a system designed for a quarterback like him to thrive. I hope that he takes that step forward. But you said it, Michael, he came into this last season without expectations. Now he has some, and a team that is trying to make a Super Bowl run here in 2023, can he live up to those expectations and handle the pressure of the role?
Well, I think the one thing about Brock Purdy, he understands his strengths and weaknesses, and all he needs to do is just stay within himself, right? You know, because last year for, you know, when Trey Lance played, they averaged 6.3 yards per attempt. When they went to Jimmy Garoppolo, they averaged 7.9 yards per attempt. That's huge, right? Mm-hmm. And when they went to Purdy, they averaged 8.1. So just play the game within yourself. I think the other thing this year will make a big difference for him is his sack percentage will go down. Last year it was at 6.1, which is too high. He got to get rid of the football quicker than that. I mean, Garoppolo was at 5.5. So I think because of his experience, he'll do a much better job in that area.
Looking to do something only one other quarterback has done in Kyle Shanahan's tenure so far as 49ers head coach, complete a full season starting at quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo did it once in 2019. And of course, that was the year that they went to the Super Bowl.
Not good.
Not good.
Not good.
So hopefully this is the one, Michael. That's all I'm saying.
I'm rooting for I got a 49er helmet over here. I'm rooting for you, girl.
My guy. We got to take our first time out of the day. But when we return, there is a lot of news that we're breaking down. I'll call them reports. We need to decipher whether or not it's news or noise when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM is all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and more. You can download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID. Open up an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi out at his office in the East Coast. I'm Stormy Bonantoni.
Stormy?
Yes, live from our VSiN studio in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. I'm going to set the table real quickly for the rest of the show because, as I mentioned off the top, it is college football week here at VSiN. So in about 15 minutes, we will get one of the primary contributors to our college football betting guide, Zach Cohen, who's going to stop by, talk a little ACC football. Later on in the hour, we'll have Will Hill join us in his usual spot here on a Tuesday. And then later on in hour two, more college football with Aaron Moore as we dive into the Big Ten and some of his best bets there. But we will start this segment here, Michael, with a little bit of news. And, you know, like I said, I need to call it reports because there is a lot of information and reports and quotes and all of these different things that are coming out of various NFL training camps right now. But I'm not sure if it's actually news or if a lot of it is noise. So you ready to get into some of the headlines?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's do it.
We're going to start in Saints country because running back Alvin Kamara still facing potential discipline by the league for everything that happened around the Pro Bowl back in 2022. As far as things go legally, he reached a plea agreement at the beginning of July to where he's not going to be facing a felony charge for his role in that fight. But according to the personal conduct policy for the NFL, a player doesn't need to have a criminal conviction to still be suspended by the league. Head coach Dennis Allen told the media yesterday that he wants to make his case to Roger Goodell. So is it news or noise to you, Michael, given the video, given what everybody has seen in this incident, the thought that Kamara making his case to Goodell will make a difference? Is that news or noise?
I think it's noise because Goodell's going to have people that are going to look over the documentation and look over the court record and all the court findings and then come up with some kind of conclusion, you know? And so if Kamara couldn't convince the court that he was innocent or that there was circumstances beyond his control, how could he convince Goodell? So to me, this is just noise. I mean, of course he's going to say it. You know, it's like what I'm sure Ronald Jones said when he got suspended for two games for performance enhancement. I didn't take that. You know, I didn't know that was in there. Well, you have to know that was in there. I mean, before you put anything in your mouth, you need to check it. I think it's the same thing here. If he thought he was innocent or he could, then he would have presented it to the court. So, and look, if every guy comes to the league office to present his case in front of Goodell, then what's the sense of having all this documentation beforehand?
Yeah, and he's a player that we know has a history, has had different issues. Last year on the field, was able to play while all of this was being figured out in the court system. 1,387 yards, just four touchdowns. His props right now, obviously off the board. What kind of impact do you think, though, if he is unavailable, as many of us expect here early in the season, that that impact will have on the Saints offense?
Well, I think he's a huge player within their offense. They signed Williams from Detroit, gives them that power back. You know, the one thing New Orleans has always done is had that 1-2 combination. Kamara, Mark Ingram, Kamara, Williams now, you know, and he scored, what, 17 touchdowns last year for Detroit? So they've got power inside, plus they've got Kamara. They'll just alter their game plan slightly. Where Kamara really shows up is in the passing game, where his ability to catch a screen, his ability to catch a down-the-field throw and then make yards after it. That's why he was at almost 9 yards a catch. That's why he's a weapon. So, you know, any game he misses, it kind of cuts down the volume of the playbook for the Saints offense with Pete Carmichael calling those plays. Even though Carr is there, it's still going to be Carmichael, Sean Payton's offense, which why they brought John Gruden is because Payton learned the offense from Gruden when they were together in Philadelphia.
Some potential, looking at that schedule you see on your screen there, should they be able to overcome not having him, start the season against the Titans at Carolina, at Green Bay, and then versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers there in week 4. Let's move along here. Giants linebacker Kayvon Thibodeau shared some of his reflections from last season to reporters yesterday, telling them, last year's film kind of disgusts him a little bit when he looks at himself. Quote, I get a little cringe feeling, but considers this a platform for him to continue to grow. Added that he was maybe a little bit too focused on individual numbers versus being available for his team and making an impact every game that he was out there. News or noise for the young defensive talent?
I mean, I think this is a self-reflection, so I'll call this news. And I think it's important. You know, there's a difference between winning and winners, right? And you've got to be willing to do what's right for the team to win when it's not really what makes you look like a winner, you know? And so I think there's that slight variation, and I think it's really important. And so one thing about Thibodeau, I mean, he understands that, you know, and I think he gets that. And I think him saying that puts the spotlight on him, because anytime you talk to the media and you say something personal about your career, people are going to watch.
I think he's a player, too, that, like, we saw make some strides the back half of last season. So hopefully he picks up where he left off last year, can become that complete pass rusher. His sack number, Michael, 5.75, had 49 tackles, 4 sacks in 14 games last season. That a reachable goal, you think? Good number for him?
Well, look, they blitz quite a bit. They bring all sorts of different kind of pressure. So, yeah, I think I'd play the over on his sack total, because the one thing with the Don Martindale defense is there's going to be a lot of different combinations. And what Thibodeau could do is he can move around into different locations. You know, he can line up off ball, on ball, and they can move him around to create the right matchup. So they need him to have more than 5.5 sacks next year. There's no question.
Talking through some of the headlines in the NFL, Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. Moving on to Jalen Ramsey, obviously had a significant injury already early at camp, had to have meniscus surgery this past Friday, but apparently very motivated post-op. Told his head coach, Mike McDaniels, that whatever timeline you guys give me, I'm going to beat it by a month. News or noise?
I think it's noise. I mean, every player wants to beat it by a month, but they don't have control of it. I mean, you can't. It's like trying to rush a field of corn. You can't make it grow faster than it really going to grow. And so there's a reason why they put that timeline on there. Now, maybe he can come back, but I think, to me, the trainers are going to err on the side of caution here and make sure that he can. If he comes back too soon, then he could re-injure, and you don't want that. I think it's noise.
He's expected to miss several months, but he is a self-proclaimed alien, and we have learned recently that aliens could be real. So
they do.
There
We've
you
heard
go.
That in front
Maybe
of the Senate.
Ramsey.
I mean, I didn't believe it, but I saw it. I mean, there were actually a Senate subcommittee hearing on this. So, and there's pictures to prove it, Stormy.
Non-human genetic material. This is what I'm talking about. Tom DeLong from Blink-182 wasn't wrong all along. Okay, let's keep it rolling here. Jets legend Joe Namath is clearly an Aaron Rodgers fan. First, he said if Rodgers came to the Jets, he would unretire his number. Didn't end up needing to do that because Rodgers took his college number 8. But now he is praising the four-time MVP for that $35 million pay cut he recently took. Called it a great sign and great exhibition of his character. Just the way he is, showing the team we want to win now. And if we don't win it this year, we're going to win it next year. News or noise, Michael?
I think it's noise. I just think it's
noise. Well, whenever it's Joe Namath post his playing career, it probably is, right?
I mean, like, seriously, like, there's always a quote. There's always something. And look, he was certainly a great player, a Hall of Fame player, guaranteed them that Super Bowl win. And they've only been to the playoffs 13 times since he said that. But to me, I think this is just a lot of noise. I mean, Rodgers, you know, he looks as happy as I've ever seen him. I don't think I've seen him this happy in his career. His personality is completely different, too. I think that's more of anything that we see because we don't really know his character. We know his character through what we heard from Green Bay.
Right. Well, Michael, that's what's been so interesting about this is because it's been so tumultuous for him in Green Bay the last couple of years, even despite him winning an MVP. But everything that has happened in that time, there were people that were outwardly saying they didn't want to vote for him for MVP just because of the way that he was as a person outwardly. So this is a completely change in philosophy and understanding of what we know about Aaron Rodgers lately.
No doubt. I mean, he's approachable. He's likable, you know, and I think to me, because he's comfortable, right? He's not feeling threatened or he's not upset about something that's going on. He loves Nathaniel Hackett. He's very comfortable with him as his coach. And I think being in the New York market, I think he's very excited to have this team around him. So, look, I think the one thing about the Jets that we have to understand is they're going to hit an obstacle. They're going to hit – there's going to be some challenges. How they deal with it. Mm-hmm. Adversity really defines the character.
And those challenges are going to start early in a primetime game against the Buffalo Bills week 1. We will also see this team in action in the Hall of Fame game in just 2 days. So actual football competition on our television screens.
I love that. I love that.
So excited about it. I'm also very excited to talk a little college football when we return here on the Lombardi Line, VSiN Zone. Zachary Cohen is going to stop by. We'll talk all things ACC and what went into this college football betting guide. Lots of great stuff to help you become a more informed bettor here in 2023. I am pumped. Stick around. More coming up here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Power ratings, picks, previews, predictions, pro. Yes, we love alliteration. As in, become a VSiN Pro subscriber and get all access to our betting tools, betting splits, and the 2023 College Football Betting Guide. Thursday's release of the guide and our previous release NFL Betting Guide will have you ready to turn a profit on the gridiron this season. The only way to get the guides, though, and everything we have to offer is by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. And you can do exactly that at VSiN.com/subscribe. One of the many tremendous contributors to this year's College Football Betting Guide. Well, we welcome into the show now Zach Cohen, VSiN reporter and editor at Betting on X on Twitter. Zachary, is that the new handle?
That is the new handle. I figured I might as well lean into it. If it catches on, it's a pretty good name.
There we go. I love it. Okay, so let's get into the ACC here because you did write-ups for both the ACC and SEC, but want to hone in on one conference at a time. And earlier this morning, we saw Clemson picked to win the league in the ACC preseason media poll, receiving 103 of those potential 176 first-place votes. Florida second with 67. UNC got 5, and even NC State scrapped themselves a first place vote here. Let's start at that level when it comes to who might win this conference championship. Where do you lean?
I really like Florida State. I think that they're going to be as good offensively as any team in the country. They finally have a good offensive line. That's kind of been their Achilles heel for the last 3 or 4 seasons. I think that they have, you know, my favorite pick to win the Heisman Trophy in Jordan Travis. And then really good group of receivers. Johnny Wilson, a 6'7" wide out, just a lot of size, you know, really good ability to make big plays. And then they brought over Keon Coleman, who is one of the best transfer wide receivers that was on the market. On top of that, they have a really good running game. Trey Benson, I think, is a future first-round NFL running back.
Yeah, so let's. You talked about the Heisman. Drake May at North Carolina certainly has to be considered, right, up for the Heisman. Last year he threw for over 4,300 yards, 38 touchdowns, 7 picks. And then they were able to get the Walker kid from Kent State to transfer in. So what's your expectations for this Tar Heel football team with Mac Brown this year?
My concern with May is something that I had a concern with Sam Howell a few years ago, is that I do think there's some potential for the wheels to fall off a bit with the Tar Heels, and then you don't even get May playing like late in the season, you know, as he tries to protect himself for the NFL draft. I still think that UNC's defense is a huge problem. It should be a little bit better than it was last year, but they were horrible at all three levels last season. I don't see it being much better, and I see that really preventing them from winning a lot of games and potentially derailing the entire year.
So does that mean you're looking under that 8.5 win total for the Tar Heels?
Yeah, that's my under there. I think that's one of my favorite plays in the conference as far as unders go.
What about overs? Wow. Is there a favorite over that you have in the ACC?
I'm really high on Miami, which is odd because I'm the type of person that usually hates to root for a school that's, you know, overhyped and just has, I don't want to say an annoying fan base, but an annoying fan base. yeah, so I do think that the Hurricanes are going to be pretty good this year. I really loved the two coordinators they brought in. They got the guy from Houston, brought over the defensive coordinator from Marshall. Those are two no-nonsense guys that have produced a lot with talent, you know, that's not as good as the talent they're going to have at Miami. These guys are going to now be working with world-class athletes in Coral Gables. I think that team is going to look a lot different this year, especially considering they really beefed up the offensive line. They brought in Javion Cohen from Alabama. They have a five-star tackle at right tackle. And I do think that if they get Zion Nelson back, a potential first-round NFL draft pick on the left side, that would be massive for them.
Yeah. I mean, Sam Hartman left Wake Forest for Notre Dame. So, you know, one thing about Dave Clawson, he's got a little bit of Mike Tomlin in him. He wins when everybody thinks he can't win. So this year, you know, he's got talent. It looks like his offense turns around, although he's got to play a young quarterback in Mitch Griffiths. What's your expectations for the Demon Deacs this year?
Yeah, so I agree with you. I'm really, you know, Clawson's like a bet-on coach for me. I'm a really big fan of his. I just think that there's going to be a bit of a retooling period this year, going from, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in program history, Hartman, who's an absolute gunslinger, you know, opens up the offense in the passing game. Now moving over to Mitch Griffiths, who's, they've compared him to John Wolford. I don't think that they're going to be able to quickly win with kind of a game managing quarterback like that. And they do have a lot of turnover on both sides of the ball. So I do think that this is a year where I'd expect Wake to go under the win total, but I don't think it'll be for long. Clawson's phenomenal, and I think they'll be right back to winning games really soon.
Well, fortunately, one thing that they do have to work in the new quarterback is one of the league's best receiving cores, but the questions on the offensive line, questions on defense for sure, ranked last in the ACC last year, allowing 33.8 points per game in conference games. Hopefully that improves, but that was a struggle watching every game be a shootout in order for them to get out on top. A team I know has been kind of a trendy underdog for folks this season is Louisville. Huge upgrade, obviously, with Jeff Brohm coming in as head coach. I've seen a few people think that they could be a dark horse candidate in the league. Win total sitting at 8. Where do you sit on the Cardinals here?
Yeah, so it's another one where I'm expecting them to be good down the road. I'm a University of Wisconsin guy, big Big Ten football fan, so I know how good of a coach Jeff Brohm is. I just don't think he's going to get the results with Plummer as his quarterback. I think that we're going to need to see him bring in a guy with a little bit more talent. I think Plummer knows his offense really well. He's going to get the ball out to playmakers as much as he can. He's kind of a guy that can manage his offense because of the experience they have together. But I don't think Louisville has a really good group of receivers. I think they do have a good running game. They do have a good defense. I just have a hard time believing that they're going to win enough games to get that over. They do have a somewhat tough schedule. I know some people think it's easy, but I saw, you know, 5-6 games on that schedule that did worry me a bit.
Well, yeah, I would say, like, obviously you're high on Miami, so the at Miami in November doesn't look ideal to you. Notre Dame expects to be tough, but I think a lot of reasons why people look at the schedule as easy is because they avoid Clemson, right? They avoid Florida State. They don't have Carolina. But then again, you expect Carolina not to live up to expectations. So there's kind of a back and forth on the dynamic of what that schedule is, I guess. I'm just unsettled on whether or not he can turn around a team that fast. We've obviously seen coaches do it, and we saw Jeff Brohm do it at Purdue, to your point. But I'm not sure if Louisville's there yet. I'm just not as high as everybody else is, so I'm with you.
Yeah, and I think that the games at NC State and at Pittsburgh are two that could trip them up. I think that those are ones that people are overlooking a bit. I like both of those teams to go over their win totals.
You know, Zach, Clemson has always been in the Final Four conversation until recently, until they haven't been able to figure out their quarterback situation. And so now Cade Klubnik comes in, and he's going to be the guy, or is he going to be the guy? Is there a freshman? I mean, I've watched this kid, Christopher Verzana, the kid they got from Nashville, who's really a talented player. Do you believe that they have solved their quarterback position at Clemson?
Yeah, it's interesting because everyone you talk to at Clemson, everything you hear is that Klubnik is a guy that they've compared to Deshaun Watson over there. I haven't personally seen it. I think that he's looked a little bit overwhelmed at times, mostly, you know, just struggling a bit under pressure. I do like his, you know, he's like a dual threat quarterback. He has a really nice arm. He can run. So I do think that there's potential there. I just think that they have a really tough schedule as well. I don't like their wide receiver group. And I think that the big issue with Clemson for me is I think that they're missing Brent Venables. I don't think that the defense looked the same last year. And the recruiting is slipping a little, not to the point that it's alarming, but it's not top five anymore. It's more top 15. Those things are going to make a difference if the coaching isn't there.
Clemson got back to the top of the mountain in the ACC last year, won 7 of the last 8 ACC titles, but Florida State, your pick, has been right there. If they beat LSU in the opener, we're going to have a really interesting week 4 matchup between those two. I want to follow up on one thought that you had, though, saying you mentioned NC State was an over that you like. I really like it, too, so much so that I was even looking at the alt over 7.5 wins, perhaps, with them. Brennan Armstrong coming in at quarterback, and he's going to reunite with his former offensive coordinator in Inai. And, I mean, I know last year was a big down year for him at the position, but set a ton of Virginia records with that OC pairing. What's your expectation for the Wolfpack?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of two offensive coordinator quarterback reuniting in the ACC conference with also having it in Pitt. But yeah, I like Armstrong. I don't think he's a better quarterback than Leary, but I do like his ability to improvise a little bit more. And I think that they're going to open up that offense a lot. They're going to take shots down the field. They'll utilize Armstrong's legs a little bit. That should help them, especially considering their defense with Tony Gibson, a defensive coordinator, is always going to be really good. So I think that if their defense kind of gets back to last year's level, Armstrong makes a few more plays, I think that's going to be a really good team.
Last year for Virginia, it was tough. He had just a 54.7 completion percentage, 12 picks. Hard to forget the game against Pitt when his first two passes of the game went the other way. But like I said, he set like a number of single season records at Virginia just the year prior in 2021. So maybe that combo can be what catapults them forward. Zachary, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
And great job, Zach. Thank you.
Great Twitter handle as well. Great stuff.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Tremendous write-ups again, not only for the ACC, but the SEC as well, from our guy Zachary Cohen in this year's College Football Betting Guide.
Available. And he loves the Big Ten. That's interesting. And he loves the Big Ten. He didn't write that up either.
I know.
So that's interesting.
Well, sometimes you got to get out of your heart, right, and use your head.
Exactly.
So maybe you get like a non-biased entity to do that. Speaking of which, we'll talk Big Ten in hour two when VSiN writer Aaron Moore joins the program. I am one of the many people, apparently, that is high on Wisconsin, betting that over 8.5. We'll get his opinion and more a little bit later.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Turn a loss into a win with BetMGM, the official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place a same game parlay wager with at least 4 legs on any MLB game. If all the legs of the parlay hit but one, you get your stake back in bonus bets up to $25. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 and up only to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. U.S. promotional offers not available in Kansas, Mississippi, D.C., Nevada, New York, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in select states. This offer not available to Puerto Rico residents. Speaking of Major League Baseball, today is the MLB trade deadline coming up at 6 Eastern, so just hours away. To help us talk a little MLB and get into college football, NFL, we know Will Hill does it all, baby. At Not The Will Hill, VSiN contributor, joining the show now. With the deadline coming up, the one big fish kind of out there everybody's talking about, Justin Verlander. I know you're all in on knowledge when it comes to the Mets and the Yankees. So any hot takes for what might happen with Verlander today?
I mean, if you're going to move Scherzer, I guess you're just going to scrap this thing and trade Verlander. I mean, he's older. You're in more of a rebuild. Now, they don't want to be terrible next year. They want to compete next year. But with this pitching staff, I don't see how that's possible. The only thing that's tricky, and Verlander is going to be sought after, whether it's Dodgers, Orioles, Braves, I mean, you name it. Somebody would want Verlander, even though he's a little older. He's still good enough where you trust him in a big game. He could help you for the last couple months plus the playoffs. Problem is he has a no trade clause. So, where he wants to go, family, that kind of thing, that I don't know. Maybe he goes back to Houston. I'd probably put it 50-50 he gets traded. Maybe 60-40 he does get traded, just because, I mean, it doesn't seem to make sense. They have a rebuilding team with a 40-year-old pitcher. So if they want to move on and they want to rebuild, I would think he wants to be on a contender this year and then next year going forward. So my guess is they would probably move him. But again, he controls this.
What about the Yankees? I know you're intimately involved there. You and Brian Cashman are having conversations. I mean, what move are you going to make for the Yankees? What are they going to do, and how do they get out of this continual trap that they seem to be in year after year?
Yeah, I'd probably go to Home Depot. I'd get a shovel. I'd dig up Ruth, DiMaggio, Mantle. I mean, other than that, I think there was a quote today. Somebody said, who could you trade for to help this offense? There's nobody. First of all, there's nobody out there. There's just not that much of the deadline because so many teams make the playoffs now. And you could say that about all these sports with the extra playoff teams, that there are fewer sellers and there's just fewer guys on the market. And the guys that are on the market, these teams say, hey, it's a seller's market. I want a little extra. So there's really not that guy out there. They're just kind of stuck with what they have. They hope the guys that they have play a little better. This isn't a team. Here's the other thing too. This isn't a team that's worth trading prospects for. I mean, you're not one player away. You can't justify trading, 20-year-old kids, guys in the farm system to go win a championship. You're nowhere close to winning a championship. So, I know the Yankee fans don't want to hear that and the Yankees don't want to admit that, but I just don't think they're in a position to trade prospects. I mean, the moves to make are already in the past. We're signing Bryce Harper, signing Corey Seager, Machado. I mean, there were so many guys, Freddie Freeman, there were so many guys in free agency where they didn't need to give up prospects. They just needed to write a check, and they have more money than anyone, and they chose not to, and they're living with their mistakes now.
3.5 games back of an AL wildcard spot right now.
Quick,
go ahead.
I want to follow up on that. So are you saying to me the Yankees' problem is a design problem or a production problem?
It's a design problem. It's absolutely a design problem. Yeah, there's just – Cashman's been there a while, but he's been there a quarter century now. And look, this is 12 years without making a World Series. I mean, there's just, you could blame it on LeMahieu's underperforming. But other than that, I mean, Rizzo slightly underperforming. It's just not that good of a roster. They had to spend a lot of money because they let Judge go to free agency. But, you could say the players are underachieving. I don't really buy that as much. There is a problem with player development, because a guy like Gleyber Torres, who you traded for and when he was a prospect, looked like he could be an MVP candidate, he's teetered off where he's an above average player, but he's nothing special. So it's a design problem.
And they are in action today, been struggling against the division a little bit as of late, dropped 2-3 to the Orioles, followed that up with a loss to the Rays yesterday, 5-1, game 2 against Tampa today. Virtual pick'em type game, see the Rays -115, Yankees -105 today, total of 8. Anything you're involved with?
I'm going to go under the 8. Like I said, they have all sorts of problems on offense. They just cannot hit. And they're actually throwing a pretty good pitch today. I know Rodon's numbers aren't pretty because he just came off the IL a month or so ago, and he wasn't sharp his first few outings. But his last time out against the Mets, he was really good. I think that's more indicative of who he is, who he's going to be. He's a really good pitcher when he's healthy. He's had trouble staying healthy. So if you got a good pitcher, anytime Rodon pitches now and anytime Cole pitches, I think the Yankees are a good under bet because they can't hit. And if they're throwing a good pitcher, that's a recipe for a low-scoring game. It was a 1-0 game the other day when Cole pitched in Baltimore. So this team is just broken on offense, and if you're going to throw a pretty good pitcher here, Eflin's been good for Tampa. I think it's a 4-2, 4-3 type of game. I'll go under the 8.
2 years in a row now, the Tennessee Titans have looked bad in the opener. And I love Mike Vrabel, but openers haven't been his thing. They lose at home to the Arizona Cardinals badly. They lose last year to the New York Football Giants badly in the fourth quarter collapse. But you like them this year in week one.
I just like Vrabel as a dog, and it's strange to hear, you know, Vrabel's not good week one, because you'd think that would be a strength of his team. He's an old school guy. You figure they got physical camps. Figure they come out ready to go week one. They're always pretty well prepared. So it's surprising his teams haven't been good in week one. And look, if his kicker makes a kick last year, they do win that game against the Giants, so that could have gone either way. I'll just take the three here. I don't totally buy the Saints as this, you know, division favorite with Derek Carr. As I've said, if Derek Carr is the answer, you're asking the wrong question. I just think Vrabel's really good as a dog. You're getting three, which is a key number here. And I think once Kamara gets suspended, assuming he will, once Kamara gets suspended, maybe this line ticks down a little bit. So to me, this could easily be a field goal game, land on the three. I don't know if there's still 3.5s out there. But to me, this is a 50-50 game. In a 50-50 game, I'll happily take the points.
Yeah, spread 3, total 41.5 for that opener for the Saints and Titans. And when it comes to Kamara, we talked about it a little bit earlier in the show, but Dennis Allen saying he's going to try to Kamara being going to try to make his case to Roger Goodell and explain his side of the story for what happened last year, Pro Bowl weekend. Sure. It is college football week here at VSiN. Of course, we've got the college football betting guide that's coming out later on this week on Thursday. And I know you're very invested in some college football futures already. We're going to talk Big Ten later. Anything in that conference that you're eyeing?
I will start. I got a couple. I will start with Iowa over 8 wins. I just think a couple of things. I think they're going to be much better on offense. You could say, hey, how could they possibly be worse? It's a good point. But they actually have a respectable quarterback now in McNamara. They're going to get a 4-star receiver as a transfer, Caleb Brown from Ohio State, who's got some ability. We know Ohio State, if they're recruiting receivers, chances are he's a pretty good player. Their whole offensive line comes back. Now, it wasn't great last year, but that's another year where they can get older, they can get bigger, they can get stronger. Iowa always known for having a really good weightlifting program. So that offense is going to be better. They only have to be average. They only have to get to 20-something points a game because they are elite on defense. Yeah, they lost a couple guys. They lost Campbell. They lost Van Ness to the pros, but they're good at reloading on defense. And they're elite in the kicking game. They're elite in the punting game. They can play small ball. They can, you know, win the game on the margins in terms of that. And they have a pretty easy draw here in terms of the schedule. They avoid Michigan. They avoid Ohio State. They have an easy non-conference. When you look at Utah State, Iowa State's down this year, Western Michigan, those are all winnable games. And then you get Rutgers. You get Northwestern. You get Purdue. You avoid the big boys. To me, they win minimum 8, and you get a push. But I think it's 50. At minimum, you get your money back, and you probably get to 9. I don't think this team is winning less than 8. So I think this is sort of a free roll here where you're at least going to get 8. Maybe you get more. And one of the teams they play is home versus Michigan State. Look, Michigan State at 5.5, it's a little bit juiced. That team is not winning 6 games. Mel Tucker, look, $95 million doesn't get it what you used to. Nick Saban's not walking through that door at Michigan State. They are so bad on defense. They are not good enough on offense to make up for it. And they have a really rough draw. They don't avoid any of the big boys. They have to play Ohio State. They have to play Michigan. They have to play Penn State, who a lot of people think are going to be really good this year. And even their 50-50 games are all on the road. Minnesota, Rutgers, these kind of games. So to me, this is a 3 or 4 win team. Under 5.5 on Michigan State, over 8 on Iowa.
Good stuff as always, wow. Will.
Thanks, Will. Appreciate you. Get back to that Yankee design problem, please, will you?
Have the conversations you need to have, Will. Make sure you follow him at Not The Will Hill, but great info as always from him. And again, we will talk more Big Ten a little bit later on in the program with fellow VSiN writer Aaron Moore. The only Big Ten win total that I have is Wisconsin, Michael, over that 8.5. But I am.
You like Wisconsin.
I do. I love Luke Fickle.
You like Luke Fickle.
I do.
You love Fickle, yeah.
What can I say? So we'll talk about that later. And I'm also high. Well, I do not love James Franklin. I am high on Penn State this year as well.
Penn State's a good team this year, yeah. Fickle's hire of Phil Longo as the offensive coordinator is going to be interesting because it's kind of a departure from kind of the style that he plays in terms of a little bit more aggressive. And, you know, we'll see if that works out. I mean, look, he's a good coach. He took the job that he waited for the right job. And I think Wisconsin is a great job for him.
Yeah, we know how Wisconsin likes to run the ball. Phil Longo likes to air it out. So it'll be a fun contrast, see if they can kind of put those two philosophies together and make a balanced attack. We got to take a quick timeout. When we return, hour two is upon us. And what's on Michael's mind next on the Lombardi Line?